Using my GI Bill taught me I can do anything. And seeing me graduate taught my daughter she can too. VA benefits cover tuition, housing, and supplies. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Welcome to Podcast Commentary, the podcast about podcasts. We take the episodes that are really getting people talking, pull together all the information out there, and give you the full picture, the core insights, and of course, the questions that are still hanging in the air.
And today we are looking at a huge one. It's a true crime story that has captivated so many people, and it was recently covered by, well, an absolute giant in the podcasting world, Crime Junkie.
That's right. We're talking about their episode from late November 2025, the one titled Missing, Zelig Williams.
Yeah, and for anyone who might not be familiar, Crime Junkie is just a behemoth. I mean, they have this massive reach. So when they decide to cover a case, especially a newer one like this, it puts this intense spotlight on the investigation. It creates real pressure to get answers.
And the story of Zelig Williams, it's almost like it was written to be a mystery. The way Crime Junkie laid it out, you're immediately hooked by all these contradictions.
Mm-hmm.
You've got this incredibly talented, successful Broadway performer, I think they call them, a pillar of light, who just vanishes in his home state of South Carolina.
Right. And then you have the timeline, which is just bizarre. There's an emergency SOS alert that points to, you know, a huge car crash, a violent impact.
But then when they find the car a day later, it's completely untouched, no damage, and it's abandoned right next to this enormous flooded wilderness area.
It just doesn't add up. So that's our mission today, really, to unpack all of these contradictions for you. Was this a tragedy born from a severe mental health crisis? Was it a horrible accident in that weather? Or, and this is what his family believes with every fiber of their being, was it something sinister? Was it foul play?
Yeah, and to understand that, you have to start with the man himself, who was Zelig Williams. Because everything the family believes, their entire theory, it all rests on who he was as a person and his connection to them.
Absolutely. Zelig Williams was, he was only 28 when he went missing. He actually turned 29 while he was still missing. And by every single account, he was just a force of nature, a real phenomenon.
And he's from Columbia, South Carolina. But his career, I mean, it took him to the absolute top. We're talking about the pinnacle of American musical theater.
We're not talking about like community theater here. This is Broadway royalty. His resume is just, it's incredible. He was an ensemble member in Hamilton for years, from 2016 to 2019, covering all these different roles.
And after Hamilton, he was in the national tour of MJ the Musical.
Yeah, as a dancer. And he was covering the role of Marlon Jackson. He was with that tour right up until December of 2023. This is a guy at the absolute peak of his profession.
And, you know, the biggest testament to his character, to the kind of person he was, came from Hugh Jackman.
Right, the superstar. Zelig had toured with him on The Man, The Music, The Show. And when Zelig went missing, Hugh Jackman posted this public, really heartfelt plea for him to come home.
When someone of that stature speaks out, you know this person was special. It just confirms how respected he was, the kind of loss the community was feeling.
Totally. And beyond the stage credits, it's his personality that everyone talks about. They called him a pillar of light, kind, compassionate, vibrant. His old dance teachers kept saying he was just. He was born to perform, but also born to teach.
I think the description that really stuck with me, though, was that he made everyone feel like they were the most special person in the room.
Yeah, that says so much, doesn't it? It tells you about his, you know, his emotional generosity. This wasn't some self-absorbed celebrity. He was someone who lifted people up.
And the most important part of this story, really, is that he had just come home. He moved back to Richland County, South Carolina, in the summer of 2024.
And he came back to be with his mom, Kathy Williams. He was going to start teaching dance workshops, giving back to his community. He was actually scheduled to teach a class later that same month. He had plans. He had commitments.
Which brings us to the family context. And this is, it's just heartbreaking. You can't understand this case or the family's reaction without knowing the tragedy they'd already lived through.
It's almost unbelievable. Zelig was Kathy Williams' only remaining child.
She had already lost his two older sisters. They were 17 and 21. They died in a car accident back in 2004.
Try to imagine that level of devastation, a mother burying two of her children. So when you hear her in those press conferences saying, all I got, that's not an exaggeration. That is the literal devastating truth of her life.
And that bond, that history, it completely shapes how the family sees this case. For them, the idea that Zelig would just walk away, that he would abandon his mother after everything she'd been through,
it's an impossibility. It's just not in his character. So their conviction, their certainty that foul play is involved, it comes from that deep personal knowledge of who he was. It's not just about the evidence for them.
It sets the stakes so incredibly high. Mm-hmm. They're not just looking for a missing person. They're looking for the person they believe took him.
Exactly.
So let's get into that timeline. Let's break down Thursday, October 3rd, 2024. The last day anyone saw Zelig Williams.
Okay, so the last confirmed sighting is Zelig leaving his mom's house on Lockwood Drive in Richland County. The time is pretty specific. It's logged between 9:45 and 9:50 in the morning.
And the details of how he left are so, so important, right?
Yeah.
Because they argue against him planning to be gone for long.
Completely. He wasn't dressed for a trip or for, you know, a hike or anything. He was wearing a plain white t-shirt, black pants, and brown slides.
Slides. So like house slippers or sandals.
Exactly. Not shoes you wear if you're planning on going anywhere far. It screams, "I'll be right back." And he was carrying his professional portfolio, his resume, his headshot.
So why would you take that with you if you were planning on disappearing or harming yourself? It suggests he was going somewhere specific, a quick drop-off, or a very brief meeting.
Right. But that sense of normalcy just, it evaporates almost immediately. Because just 18 to 20 minutes after he leaves, around 10 a.m., we get the first huge, confusing clue.
The SOS alert.
The SOS alert from his iPhone. The feature that's designed to detect a severe crash, a violent impact. It sent an alert to his friends, specifically friends of his in New York City.
And they immediately called his mother, right? They raised the alarm.
He did. And this is where the location paradox, as you called it, really kicks in and starts to confuse everything.
Because the location of that alert, the place it pinged from, was 1100 Old Garner's Ferry Road.
Which, if you look on a map, is nearly 20 miles away from where they eventually found his car.
20 miles? It's a huge discrepancy. So if the alert was from a real crash, why is his car found a day later, 20 miles in a different direction, and completely undamaged?
It's the central question. And, you know, when you look into these crash detection alerts, it gets even more complicated. Dispatchers say they can be really sensitive.
Like you could just drop your phone hard.
You could drop it or slam on the brakes really hard, or if the phone was thrown. Any of those things could potentially trigger the G-force sensors and send out a false alarm.
So, okay, let's trace this. He leaves home. He drives for maybe 18 minutes. The phone sends an SOS from this Old Garner's Ferry Road location. This suggests either A, there was an accident or an altercation there, or B, the phone was dropped or thrown during a struggle.
And that location, Old Garner's Ferry Road, it becomes this ghost in the investigation because all the search efforts ended up focusing on the Palmetto Trail where the car was found, not where the SOS came from.
It seems like investigators just decided the SOS was a false alarm because of the car's condition.
It looks that way. Which brings us to the next day, Friday, October 4th. That's when the family officially reports him missing.
And then late that night, around 11 p.m., a deputy finds the car.
Yeah, a Richland County Sheriff's deputy, just on a routine patrol, finds Zelig's red SUV. It's abandoned in the parking lot for the Palmetto Trail, right off Bluff Road. And this spot is key. It's right next to the watery passage and on the edge of the huge Congaree National Park.
And this is the moment that solidifies the whole contradiction. The car is
undamaged. Completely. Not a scratch on it. No sign of a crash. No impact. Nothing. Which just completely negates the SOS alert from the day before. And of course, Zelig is gone.
So the undamaged car basically confirms the SOS was either a mistake, a deliberate trick, or the result of something other than a car crash.
Right. It immediately shifts the focus. This isn't a roadside accident anymore. Now you're looking at abduction or him walking away or someone purposefully staging a scene. And the question becomes, did the alert go off on Old Garner's Ferry Road and then somebody drove the car 20 miles to the trailhead? And if they did, why?
Okay, let's dig into that scene of the Palmetto Trailhead because the clues left there are so bizarre, so contradictory, they kept this case cold for over a year now. This is really the heart of the whole puzzle.
And we have to start with the evidence that's missing, the phone. The iPhone that sent that critical SOS alert has never been found, or at least police have never publicly said they found it.
And that phone would be everything. I mean, call logs, text messages, browsing history, GPS pings. It would be an absolute goldmine of information. Its absence is a huge problem.
It's a black hole in the investigation. But then you have maybe the single most powerful piece of evidence that supports the family's theory of foul play. And that's the car's GPS data. It tells a very suspicious story.
Right. It wasn't as simple as him driving there and parking.
Not at all. The data showed that the SUV pulled into the Palmetto Trailhead parking lot, and then it left again. It drove away entirely.
And then came back.
And then it returned to the very same parking spot where the deputy eventually found it.
Wow. Okay, so let's unpack that. I mean, that's just, it's really hard to explain if Zelig was acting alone.
It's almost impossible. If you're having a mental health crisis and you wander off into the woods or you go for an impromptu hike, why would your car leave and then come back? It strongly, strongly implies a second person was involved.
So what's the motive for staging something like that? Why move the car?
There are a couple of possibilities. One is creating a false trail. The Congaree National Park is massive, it's swampy, and at that time it was flooded and dangerous. If you dump the car there, you send hundreds of searchers into a massive wilderness area on a wild goose chase.
Buying the perpetrator time to get away and cover their tracks somewhere else?
Exactly. The other motive could be to establish a false timeline or alibi. You know, if you use the car for something after Zelig disappeared, you bring it back to the scene to make it look like everything happened right there, right at the beginning.
It also makes you wonder about forensics. I mean, if someone else drove that car, they touched the steering wheel, the gear shift, the door handle, did they find any DNA that wasn't Zelig's? The fact that police have said nothing about that is, it's frustrating.
It's incredibly frustrating. That car's movement alone just pushes the probability needle way over toward foul play. But then you layer on top of that the clue of the abandoned shoes.
His brown slides. He was seen leading in them, and they were found inside the car, along with his clothes.
Which just feels so unnatural. Think about it. If you're planning on hiking in a national park, you'd bring hiking boots and you would change into them. You wouldn't arrive in slides and then just leave them behind to go barefoot.
And if you're in distress, fleeing from something, are you really going to take the time to neatly leave your slides and clothes in the car before you run into a swamp? It feels deliberate.
It does. And his family, especially his cousin, Miyoki Corbett Jacobs, she really hammered this point home. She talked about the terrain itself. The path from that parking lot toward the river is really rocky. She said he couldn't have walked even 6 feet on that path without shoes. It would be agony.
So that's a really strong counterargument to the theory that he just, you know, walked off in some kind of trance-like state.
Very strong one. It makes it seem much more likely that he was either forced into another vehicle from his car, or he was getting ready to change for some reason and was interrupted. The clothes being there, too, just adds to that feeling of a transition that was stopped mid-act.
And then, as if all of that wasn't confusing enough, you had this massive environmental factor that basically compromised everything.
Yeah, Hurricane Helene. He disappeared right as the region was getting hammered by this severe weather system. The watery river, which is right there by the trail, it crested at almost 106 feet.
106-foot crest. For people who don't live near rivers, what does that actually mean for an investigation on the ground?
It means total devastation. The entire search area was underwater. A flash flood, any evidence, footprints, scent trails for the canines, a dropped wallet, anything, it would have been completely washed away, gone.
And then when the water goes down, it leaves behind mud and debris, burying whatever might have been left.
Exactly. So the timing is just tragically perfect if you're trying to hide something. If he was in the water, the current would have carried him miles away. And if the scene was staged, Mother Nature came in right behind and washed the whole slate clean.
It's a perfect storm of confusing evidence and lost evidence. And on top of all that, you have a human element. The family did confirm he was on medication. They thought he had stopped taking it.
And that detail is the crucial piece for anyone who leans toward the mental health crisis theory.
Right.
Because while the family is certain it's foul play, they are also very open about his vulnerability at the time. An unverified online comment suggested it was schizophrenia, and the family said his condition could make him appear to be in a trance-like state or in distress. And that vulnerability, it's the one thing that makes the he walked away theory seem plausible to outsiders, even when the physical evidence, like the car and the shoes, screams the opposite.
So you have physical evidence pointing one way toward a staged crime scene, and this deeply personal vulnerability pointing another way toward a tragic accident or crisis. You can see why this case is just completely stuck.
It's a complete deadlock.
So with a case this confusing from the very beginning, the initial police response is so critical. What did that look like? How did they start the search?
Well, to their credit, the initial response was very fast and very robust. The Richland County Sheriff's Department, or RCSD, they mobilized a lot of resources right away. And they worked with the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, the DNR, because of the location, you know, with the river and the park.
And this was a serious search. I mean, we're not talking about a few guys walking a trail.
No, not at all. They brought in the high-tech assets. They had helicopters up for an aerial view, drones with thermal imaging, canine units trying to get a scent before the floodwaters ruined everything, and boats physically on the Congaree River.
And volunteers joined in, too.
Oh, yeah. Groups like Adam Brown Adventures, who are specialists in these really difficult river searches, they were out there early on. So initially, it really seems like they were throwing everything they had at that area around the Palmetto Trail.
And the sheriff, Leon Lott, he was careful about how he classified it at the start.
He was. He made a public statement saying it was being investigated as a missing person case that could involve foul play. And that little phrase, that could involve, was really important. It kept their options open.
And at the same time, the community response was just massive.
It was incredible. Zelig's old dance company, Southern Strut, was organizing things. Friends and family put together candlelight vigils, huge search parties, fundraisers. It was a full-on community mobilization.
And at the center of it all was his mother, Kathy Williams. Despite this unimaginable pain she was going through, again, she became the public face of this fight. Her pleas for information were so powerful.
You can't overstate her strength. And then, as we mentioned, Hugh Jackman's appeal brought it to a national level. That kind of visibility is invaluable. It meant tips could come in from anywhere, not just South Carolina. The family also put up a $10,000 reward, showing how serious they were.
Despite all that initial activity, all that national attention, the investigation seems to have just hit a wall, a complete information void. We're over a year later now, and there's been almost nothing new.
The silence from the RCSD has been, for the family, just deafening. After that first press conference in October 2024, the updates basically stopped. And it's worth noting, sources said that at that first press conference, they didn't allow any questions from the media.
Which is always a strange sign, isn't it? When police go quiet like that, what does it usually mean? Are they hiding something big, or do they just have nothing to say?
It can be either. Sometimes silence is strategic. You don't want the person responsible to know what you know. But when that silence stretches on for more than a year and reporters who are asking for interviews get nothing back, it usually means the trail has gone completely cold. It suggests they've exhausted every lead they had from the physical evidence at the scene.
The family even tried to go their own route with a private investigator.
They did, which is a common step for families who feel frustrated. But in this case, the PI also went silent, never publicly disclosed what, if anything, they found. It's just another dead end.
And the official status of the case is still so ambiguous.
Yep. As of the one-year mark, an RCSD spokesperson basically just repeated the same line. It's an active missing person case with potential foul play, and there are no new updates. For the family, who sees what they believe is clear evidence of a crime, that just feels like stagnation.
It sounds like once the physical search of the trail ended, the official investigation just stalled, and the family was left to figure out where to look next on their own.
That's exactly what it looks like.
And that leads us to the heart of the conflict here, these competing theories. Since the massive search of the park and the river turned up absolutely nothing, where does that leave things? Where is the family focusing their energy now?
Well, the biggest change is that they've decisively moved on from the Palmetto Trail. The family and the nonprofit that's been helping them, Missing Link, they've concluded that the wilderness area should be, in their words, crossed off. The thinking is, if he was there, with that level of searching, they would have found something.
Which, logically, has to make them believe even more strongly in foul play. It forces the question away from what happened to him in the woods and toward who did he interact with before he got there.
Precisely. His cousin, Miyoki Corbett-Jacobs, has been very clear about this. She said the family absolutely believes that there is foul play. And they always come back to two things. Zillig's character. He would never, ever abandon his mom. And the bizarre evidence. The car moving, the missing phone, the clothes left behind. To them, it all points to him being lured away or taken.
They think someone is out there who knows something but is scared to talk.
Yes. And their goal is to get the police to officially reclassify this as a crime, like a kidnapping. They believe changing that label might convince a witness to finally come forward.
But we do have to talk about the counter theories that are still out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
The ones that focus on the accident or suicide angle, which are all fueled by his known mental health vulnerability.
We do. And that initial narrative was very powerful. You have the SOS ping, the fact that he was off his medication. It creates a plausible story for a sudden tragic event. the idea that he had an acute crisis, left his car, and went into the flooded river. And if that happened, with that current, his body could have been swept miles downstream, which would explain why he was never found.
But let's apply some critical thinking to that theory. Geographically, does it even make sense?
Well, that's the problem. People who know that area, locals, they describe the Palmetto Trail as a swampy, flat area. There aren't any cliffs, no great height to jump from. It's not a dramatic suicide spot. You'd basically just be walking into a marsh.
And psychologically, it doesn't quite fit either. The resume. Why would you bring your professional headshot and resume with you if you were planning to end your life?
It's the biggest flaw in that theory. A resume is about the future. It's about planning. It directly contradicts the mindset of someone who believes they have no future.
So this is the central tension of the case. His vulnerability suggests one path, accident or self-harm. But the evidence, the resume, the staged car, it all suggests another path, planning or foul play.
They can't both be true. And it all comes down to what was driving his actions in those final hours. Was it his vulnerability or was it a plan he had for that day?
So with the trail crossed off the list, the family has shifted their focus entirely. They're now looking at his social circles, right? The people he was interacting with when he moved back home.
This is the most interesting and maybe the most critical new direction in the whole case. They are digging into the groups and the people Zelig was talking to just before he disappeared. Specifically, they're looking at churches he had recently started attending, both in South Carolina and in Atlanta.
And this connects to a really specific, though unverified, detail that came from an acquaintance about a major change in his life.
Yes. The detail is that Zelig had recently told people he had been saved from being gay and reborn in Jesus. Now, we have to be careful here. This is unverified. But if it's true, it opens up a huge new potential motive.
How so?
Well, think about it. Zelig comes from the world of Broadway, a culture that is very accepting of LGBTQ plus identity. If he suddenly underwent a very profound religious conversion that involved rejecting a core part of his former identity, it could put him in a very vulnerable and potentially exploitable situation.
You mean he might have been exposed to new groups of people?
Exactly. It could have exposed him to individuals or groups who might prey on people going through that kind of intense identity shift, people who might exploit that vulnerability. And secondly, it reframes that whole morning. If he was pursuing new religious opportunities, maybe he was taking his resume to a ministry, not a dance studio.
That would completely change the context of him leaving with his portfolio. He was going to a meeting, a professional meeting, just not the kind we first assumed.
Right. And if he was meeting someone he trusted from within this new religious circle, that trust could have been betrayed. Someone he knew could have convinced him to do things that seem strange to us, like remove his shoes for a ritual before taking advantage of his vulnerable state. That scenario explains the staged car and the abandoned items much, much better than some random stranger attacking him at a trailhead.
It's a powerful theory. It shifts the crime from a random act of violence to a targeted, planned betrayal rooted in his personal life.
And when the family felt like they had nowhere else to turn, they even sought out non-traditional help. The nonprofit Missing Link brought in psychics and mediums.
Which really just shows you how desperate they were for any kind of lead.
It does. And for what it's worth, these intuitive services all reportedly felt that the searches were happening in the wrong place, that Zelig wasn't on the trail. Now, obviously that holds no legal weight, but it did align with the family's own gut feeling and their eventual decision to look elsewhere. It was a validation of their instinct.
So here we are, November 2025. It's been over a year since Zelig Williams had disappeared, and the case is still officially active, still officially unsolved, but it feels like it's completely stalled.
It's just a case that's defined by its contradictions, isn't it? You have this celebrated, vibrant artist who vanishes, leaving behind an SOS alert 20 miles from where his undamaged but suspiciously moved car is found, with his shoes and clothes just sitting inside. The facts just refuse to line up into any one simple story.
His cousin, Miyoki. She said something that was just, it was gut-wrenching, but it summed it all up. She said, 6 months, and we understand what the probabilities are, but we also know what the possibility is. And it's that possibility that keeps them going.
And you know, this story, it really resonates in that part of South Carolina. The source is connected to another frustrating cold case, the disappearance of Dale Dinwiddie in Columbia way back in 1992. It just highlights the shared pain of families in the Midlands who've been waiting, sometimes for decades, for any kind of closure.
And through it all, the strength of his mother, Kathy Williams, is just unbelievable. Her statement about her faith, considering what she's lost, is just incredible. She said, "If he is with God, all's well with my soul. If he is not, I want him to come home."
Her resilience is the emotional core of this entire story.
Yeah.
And the family's focus, their willingness to shift from searching the swamp to investigating his social circles, his church contacts, that's the kind of proactive work that can actually break a case like this open when the physical evidence runs out. They're trying to figure out who Zelig was meeting that day.
So as we wrap up this deep look into the Zelig Williams case, I want to leave you with one final thought to consider, something that pulls all these contradictions together.
Mm-hmm.
Given all the strange details, the car's GPS data, suggesting it was deliberately staged, the abandoned shoes that implied some kind of transition was happening, does this case feel more like an opportunistic crime? You know, a random attack where a stranger forced Zelig out of his car? Or does the evidence, including his personal and spiritual transition and his mental vulnerability, point more strongly to something else? To him, going to meet someone he knew, someone who then exploited that trust and that vulnerability, maybe luring him away from his car as part of the very meeting he had prepared for?
And the answer to that question changes everything. Because one path means you should be looking at random traffic and strangers near the trail. The other path means you need to be digging deep into Zelig's emails, his texts, and his new contacts in the days right before he vanished.
The evidence seems to lean toward the latter, a planned meeting that went horribly wrong.
We just have to urge you, if you listen to this in any detail, no matter how insignificant it seems, sparked a memory or a connection for you, please, anyone with any information about the disappearance of Zelig Williams should contact the Richland County Sheriff's Department. The number is 803-576-300.
Or you can contact Crime Stoppers anonymously at 1-888-CRIME-SC. That possibility for closure is still there. Zelig and his family, they deserve for him to be brought home.